Sure. No, I think that this particular issue of securing the maximum possible degree of disclosure about the reality of the UFO phenomenon and the fact that the intelligence behind the UFO phenomenon is non-human and is almost certainly extraterrestrial from another star system. It may manifest in certain ways that is perceived as extra dimensional as well. But the bottom line is this is one of the most profound sets of pieces of information that could possibly be provided to our human family.
Welcome to Far Out with Faust, everybody. I am Faust Chicho, and today I am very, very excited to be joined by an incredibly awesome individual who I have had a lot of affection and respect for many years, Daniel Sheehan. Let me tell you about this awesome guy, in case you haven't heard of him, what he's been up to. Danny is president and co-founder of the Romero Institute and former president and co-founder of the Christic Institute. Carrying degrees from Harvard College and Harvard Law School, Danny has helped lead multiple lawsuits of tremendous and historic importance, including three Supreme Court cases. Prior to forming the Christic Institute, he litigated a number of high-profile social justice cases, including a landmark defense of First Amendment rights and rights of the press in what is well known as the Pentagon Papers. He also represented in the Watergate burglary case and as general counsel to the United States Jesuit Order's National Office of Social Ministry, Danny developed a reputation as a fierce advocate for the rights of political and peace activists. In 1977, Danny partnered with the National Organization of Women, and with a coalition of activists, he won a record-setting $10.5 million judgment on behalf of nuclear worker and whistleblower Karen Silkwood. Now, that case would eventually be made into a movie, which some of you guys may recall, called Silkwood, starring Meryl Streep and Kurt Russell, directed by one of my first acting mentors way back in the day, the legendary Mike Nichols. Following the success of the Silkwood case, Danny co-founded the Christic Institute. They prevailed in several celebrated cases opposing the structural sources of injustice in the U.S. and around the world, including representing victims of the Three Mile Island nuclear disaster, and bringing charges against 29 people involved in the civil case associated with the Iran-Contra affair. Danny formed the Romero Institute in 1992, and that is a law and policy center based in Santa Cruz, California. It's an institute that is dedicated to exposing and implementing solutions to serious threats to our environment, structural injustice, and human and constitutional right violations. In the midst of all that, Danny also, and this is the topic we're going to get into today, became head legal counsel for Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project. That's not exactly where his involvement in the UFO phenomenon and subsequent cover-up began, but I would like to say this about my esteemed guest. It is rare that I get a chance to sit down with a person I consider a hero, a person who spent a career righting wrongs and fighting against corporate and government tyranny while wrestling one Goliath after the next for the truth that has been stolen from us. Danny is a national treasure, and it is my great, great honor to have him on the show. Danny, thank you so much for beaming in. Forgive the long intro.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Danny, I would love for this podcast to serve as, you know, a clarion call for every American and every citizen of this planet, you know, regardless of demographic, to get them to realize why that this issue is so vital right now, you know, why they need to be aware of what's at stake if this cover-up is allowed to kind of fade back into the shadows. And I thought that would be a great place to start with you overall.
Great. Well, that as we know, what we're talking about here is the latest kind of iteration of the effort on the part of the citizens of the world to force the governments, in this particular case, the United States government, to acknowledge the reality of the UFO phenomenon. For many decades, as people know, the United States government has been actively lying asserting that there is no such thing as a UFO phenomenon, that it's all mistaken identities of flocks of birds, swamp gas, Venus, reflection of searchlights off clouds. They've been going through these various iterations of a half a dozen supposed investigations of the existence of UFOs. And it's now been made completely transparent from deep insiders who have testified now under oath to Congress that this has been a big fat lie. That they've been in possession of actual extraterrestrial non-human spacecraft for decades, and that they've been engaged in a secret program, an ultra-secret program, attempting to back-engineer the technology of the UFOs to develop weapons systems for the United States to attempt to support their effort to establish full-spectrum military dominance over the planet, in their own words, and that this revelation that there exists an extraterrestrial civilization of non-human beings that are highly intelligent and highly technologically developed, and in fact, apparently much in advance of our own positions on technology, such that they have achieved the technology of interstellar travel, superluminal, faster than light travel, and that they've been coming and going from our planet. And the United States government has been involved in a long time, deeply covert program of attempting to shoot down these UFOs in order to recover the technology of them so that the United States covert operations people can build new weapon systems to establish superiority on our planet. This is a travesty, actually. That here we're faced with an opportunity to actually realize that our human family is not only not located in the geophysical center of the entire universe, which our human family believed for a long time, up until Galileo, and Copernicus and the others. But the reality is that we are not, in fact, alone in the universe. We are not, in fact, at the apex of the pyramid of all sentient life in the universe. Now, this has profound implications for our human family, because the entire spectrum of human worldviews that range all the way from the extreme right to the extreme left, from authoritarianism to being reactionary, to being conservative, to being moderate, to being liberal, to being progressive, or even being utopianist. That whatever the worldview, it's all of them share one common feature. And that is that we are the supreme intelligence in the entire universe. In fact, that the universe basically exists as a stage on which the sole drama of the evolution of our own particular species from ascending from the kind of primordial slime of our planet up to the point of being a starfaring species is the only major drama going on in the universe. And therefore, we are the featured players in the universe. And the import of recognizing that there is another civilization that is coming and going from our planet and traveling at superluminal speeds and exploring the entire universe already is shocking, potentially, to people, unless there is a responsible process by means of which we bring this information out to our people and get people to adjust to this. And the fact is that the national security state people here in the United States have been using this as an excuse, a rationale for refusing to reveal the existence of this extraterrestrial civilization to our people. And behind that curtain have been secretly attempting to transform this extraordinarily important reality into weapon systems. So that this has profound implications for our religious and spiritual sense of who we are in the universe, our geopolitical understandings of what the structures are that are actually operative on our planet. If there is a civilization coming and going from our planet that is capable of, for example, shutting off all of our nuclear missiles. We have actual sworn testimony now of people like Robert Salas and Colonel Arnoldson, who were at the Montford Maelstrom Air Force Base back in 1967 when a UFO came up over the Minuteman missile site and shut off all 10 of the missiles. We have demonstrated information about these craft being able to come in from outer space, basically over 80,000 feet high, down to right to the surface of an ocean in 0.7 tenths of 1 second, which is traveling like at over 40,000 miles an hour inside our atmosphere without any friction, and coming to an abrupt stop, which generates some 600 G's of force, and then goes under the water and travels at over 100 miles an hour underwater. And there are myriad sightings through sonar from our submarines of these vehicles traveling under the water and going and coming from what appear to be some kind of bases of some sort beneath the sea. So this is not a science fiction movie. This is in fact a reality now, in that thousands of people have had direct encounters, not only sightings of the UFO vehicles, but purported, very credible reported encounters with the actual occupants of these craft. And this has been being kept secret. And very importantly, this deep national security state apparatus in our country has been lying to the Congress of the United States, has been pilfering money appropriated for other programs to secretly finance this effort to shoot down and capture these vehicles and to back engineer them for purposes of developing an extraordinary set of weapons. So this is this is the why this is extraordinarily important for our people to come to understand that the Congress has now taken it upon itself to call before it whistleblowers, people that are deeply embedded in this UFO program, who have firsthand collaborated knowledge of this program. And that has just begun to happen through the efforts of people like Luis Elizondo, whom I happen to personally legally represent, Christopher Mellon, who was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence under both the Clinton Democratic administration and the George W. Bush Republican administration. We have an overwhelming percentage of the senators and the members of the House of Representatives all demanding that this information be turned over and we can discuss it. There's a 64-page bill that has been passed by the United States Senate, approved by the Senate Intelligence Committee 17-0. You know, all eight Republican senators, all nine Democratic senators, and a 24-page version of it has been passed by the House, demanding that all of this information be turned over, be gathered together and turned over to the National Archives and made available to our Congress. So this is the issue that we're going to be talking about here today, and it's of inordinate importance to our people.
It is, and we're going to get into the 64-page version and the 24-page one that went through, and the big differences in the two. But you know, I heard you say, and I had a great debate with my resident skeptic about this on a show I did once about the power plant that was shut down. But here's the thing. I know that that's not the only power plant that was shut down. But, you know, that was the one I had the most evidence on and could argue. And he went into this big old thing about it, you know, it being debunked. But I know that you have, you know, a lot of information about, you know, not only that event, you know, I mean, harder information than I could have presented in my argument. And I wanted to bring you back to that real quick. I know that that wasn't the only one. You know, can you talk about some of the evidence that has come forward for those shutdowns, you know, of sure. the nuclear power plants?
For example, what we're talking about is nuclear missile sites here to begin with. At Malmstrom Air Force Base up in Montana back in 1967. I've personally interviewed both Captain Robert Salas, who was the turnkey guy that was in charge of igniting the missiles to send them into warfare down in the hole with the missile, and with the commander of the base, Lieutenant Colonel Arnie Arnoldson. I've interviewed both of them personally, and I've done hundreds of depositions and sworn interviews and interrogations of people under oath, and I'm able to determine when people are telling the truth. Not only that, but they were willing to provide names of other military people that were at the site who all witnessed this taking place. And they've come forward and provided this information under oath to the United States Congress. Now, I personally brought Colonel Arnoldson to meet with his congressional representative to present the evidence directly to them. And the congressman said, well, you know, I personally... No, I believe this is really true, but I can't do anything about it. You know, that I would be attacked and I'd have my personal career despoiled if I were to go forward. And that was indicative of the existence of a program that exists, a deep covert program that exists in the Pentagon and in the national intelligence community to actually stifle this information, to attack people, to criticize them, to ruin their professional careers. There have been undersea, underwater UFOs that have encountered our nuclear aircraft carriers and have completely shut them down, cut off all their communications, disabled their entire power system, and left them dead in the water for several minutes just to show that they could do it. And that this has happened over and over again, and some of the initial sightings of this recent era over the last 80 years or so began back in 1945 at Alamogordo, at the White Sands Proving Grounds, where they were getting ready to detonate the first atomic bomb. That we have direct eyewitnesses, for example, Colonel Philip Corso, who was a range officer there, a security officer, who actually not only talked and testified about seeing multiple UFOs flying all around the area, kind of surveilling what was going on there, but also encountered a UFO on the ground that had been somehow disabled by running into this massive amount of radar that was up all around the site for security. And he actually had a direct encounter face-to-face with an extraterrestrial occupant of the craft. Now, the reason that I believe that to be true, in addition to my having talked with him personally about it, is because I saw a little 8-millimeter homemade black and white movie film that he filmed in his house, just put up the little 8-millimeter camera and recorded this to be shown to his grandchildren after he died.
Wow.
So that he, and you know, that people don't do that, you know, and try to lie to their grandchildren from the grave about an event like that, you know, so there's been dramatic evidence from dozens and dozens of people who have purported very credibly to have had direct face-to-face encounters with the occupants of UFO vehicles, that telepathically they've been told, you have to do something to get rid of these nuclear weapons, that you're going to destroy the entire life-generating capacity of your planet. And your planet is one of the comparatively rare planets in this galaxy that generates or gestates life. You know, and that you people cannot do this. You cannot completely destroy the life generating capacity of your planet, because this is a source of living material for other star systems that come here and harvest your genetic material from plants and animals and others, and it turns out even indeed from human beings, to attempt to foster and promote life on other star systems. So this is, I mean, it sounds like science fiction, but it's only because
it does, science fiction to most people
has attempted to convey some of this information. You know, so it's the other way around. The science fiction movies are based on these reports.
Exactly.
And then they fictionalize them, and they've done all kinds of things to try to pretend that these extraterrestrial beings are going to come here to eat us or, you know, or devour our children. You know, I mean, it's completely reckless and irresponsible. It's kind of intergalactic racism, you know?
Yeah.
Or speciesism.
And it's methodical, you know, in a lot of ways. And we have decades of conditioning to try to work through. And we live in such a, you know, to top it all off, even if we didn't, we have this materialistic Newtonian consciousness that is, you know, kind of placed a veil over this planet. Unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of people realizing that there's a lot more to consciousness and to life than what we can see, you know, but a great many people are still in that rat race. They're still stuck, you know, with that thinking, you know, well, there's nothing faster than the speed of light. And if I can't see it, it doesn't exist. Meanwhile, you know, we do know that we see I don't even know if you could call it a sliver. It's a scintilla of an iota, you know, of reality that we're perceiving. It's on the wavelength.
Three tenths of 1%. we are capable of physically discerning with our five senses, you know, one third of 1% of all of the electromagnetic frequencies in the universe. Okay, and so the entire other dimensions of reality exist that we're unable to discern. Now, exactly. We've been developing artificial means of magnifying our capacities to see and to hear down into tiny sub-microscopic particles of matter and into large, huge, galactic-sized scales of telescopes that we can see. But the bottom line is that's what's now made it clear to us that we can only see one-third of 1% of all heavy electromagnetic frequencies in reality. So one of the theories that's been espoused by the people that have been secretly studying this inside the Pentagon is that in addition to there being potentially beings from other star systems who are traveling and coming and going from here, that there may be beings that actually exist in another vibrational dimension could be conceivably appearing, not necessarily in UFOs, in these craft, because they wouldn't apparently need those, but they appear through these kind of apertures that all of a sudden kind of open, and people have been able to kind of see into another dimension temporarily and see other living beings there. And then the apertures close. Now, this is a separate, in my opinion, is kind of a separate phenomenon from the UFO phenomenon itself. But it appears that the way that the extraterrestrial interstellar conscious beings travel in the UFOs, it manifests itself in a way that causes them to look like they just materialize, that they come out of a super high frequency state in which they basically are transported from another star system to here.
Yeah.
And then they unveil, basically, and it looks like they may be coming out of some other dimension. But it appears that the interstellar craft present themselves like that when we see them, and that they can disappear in addition to doing all the other things that they do, that they raise the vibrational frequency of the vehicle so that it's vibrating at a rate that makes it invisible to us. That's what seems to be happening here.
Right. And I think It'll be some time, but I think that science, making air quotes, will catch up to that. And I think there's a lot to that theory. You know, I heard what you said about the national security state. It's safe to call them the international security state, since they're definitely, you know, a global, you know, they have global reach. We know that. And, you know, I don't buy for a moment that the concern they present to the public and the officials when they're confronted on this is that, oh, people can't handle it, and then people will lose their shit and remember the radio broadcast or some, you know, that they did, and War of the Worlds. And but I don't buy that for a second. You know, I know the real, I mean, I believe I know the real reason why they have, this has become, you know, the number one priority secret since the, you know, discovery of and reverse engineering of these kind of technologies. And that is, you know, it is about control, but it's also about, you know, the control that the industrialization and the energy sectors allow them to have over, you know, you and I and the rest of the people, you know, as they sit and collect, you know, money on things that should be absolutely free to a civilized, evolving planet right now, filled with people, you know, things that would allow for, you know, a people to truly thrive. And before I get into, you know, some of the things that I've been, you know, really up to my ears in research on, you know, I would love for you to talk a little bit about that, because in my opinion, that is the real reason, you know, why the cover up, why the extent, why, you know, the moment something comes down, you know, the United States is there. It doesn't matter if it's in Brazil, doesn't matter if it's in Africa. We are there. We are boots on the ground in minutes, you know, before even the locals can even gather. And that's also been widely reported by people who have started to come forward and report on being on these crash retrieval teams, you know. But I would love for you to give me your opinion on that. And because, as I said, I believe that is the reason for the cover-up, the biggest reason.
That's right. Now, that how my actual professional involvement in all of this began was back when I was at the United States Jesuit headquarters in Washington, D.C., from 1975 to 1985, immediately after the election of President Carter in November of 1976. One of the first things that President Carter did is he asked the head of the Central Intelligence Agency to come down to Plains, Georgia, where he hadn't even come to Washington yet. He had been the governor of Georgia. And that he asked that the head of the CIA come down to Plains, Georgia, to his home, to brief him on the UFO issue and what his connection was possibly to extraterrestrial life. The CIA director at that time, in November of 1976, was George H.W. Bush, later to become president. But at that time, he was the head of the Central Intelligence Agency. He'd been appointed by Gerald Ford. When Gerald Ford replaced Richard Nixon, when Nixon had resigned because of the Watergate crisis. George Bush refused to brief the president about the UFO issue and anything about their knowledge of extraterrestrial intelligence, arguing that the president had no need to know. And because of that, President Carter contacted the Congress. The Science and Technology Division of a committee of the House of Representatives, and asked them to contact the Library of Congress, the Congressional Research Service, to conduct a professional government investigation of what information was available. The head of the Science and Technology Division of the Congressional Research Service, Dr. Marcia Smith, contacted me at Jesuit headquarters. And ask if I would become special counsel to that investigation, that research project. It was in that context that I acquired access to the classified portions of Project Blue Book. which was the 1952 to 1967 so-called investigation on the part of the United States Air Force about the UFO phenomenon. Well, it turns out that there were over 700 instances of huge numbers of people in very credible sources is witnessing UFOs.
Wow.
That the Project Blue Book was unable to discredit and unable to even make up some fantasy about what
that was their job.
And that's how they viewed their responsibility. So, but the bottom line is they had delegated those other 700 some sightings into a special category. It was all classified. And I was given access to that. And I actually saw photographs of UFO crash retrieval activities.
Wow.
So I realized that. And this was like in the early spring of 1977. And so I became aware of the fact that this was going on. I brought the information back to the Jesuit headquarters as the largest single order in the largest religious denomination in Western culture and tried to get them to get the other religions in the country, in the United States, through the Washington Interreligious Staff Council to set up a task force to investigate this and to try to get out ahead of this information theologically and philosophically. They declined to do that, but I continued to work on this particular subject, utilizing the resources that I had at my disposal. And because of that, I ended up being retained by Dr. John Mack later in 1994 to represent Dr. Mack at Harvard University. These military officials who had been ordered to go get psychiatric exams because they'd insisted upon pushing forward and filing official reports about the UFO encounters had been ordered to get a psychiatric exam. And a number of them had been sent to Harvard, to the medical school, to get the kind of official imprimatur of a psychiatric exam. And Dr. John Mack had been the one that conducted that analysis.
He was the head of the psychological department at Harvard, right?
Yeah, he was the head of the Department of Clinical Psychiatry. And so he ended up discovering that these people kept giving these detailed reports about the encounters that had been had. And he ended up reaching out to other people to conduct an investigation, basically, of this interesting phenomenon of people in very responsible positions reporting these encounters. And he wrote a book about it and was dragged up in front of a faculty committee at Harvard that were basically threatening his tenure. And he contacted me because I had been a graduate of Harvard College and Harvard Law School. And also had done my early master's degree work at the Harvard Divinity School, from which I was recruited to Jesuit headquarters. So I then got to prepare the witnesses to present on behalf of Dr. Mack. And so it was in that additional context that I got to meet all kinds of the people that were involved, and as Stanton Friedman and Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and Linda Moulton Howe. And Stephen Greer and all the kind of people that were doing the research on this. And I then became, when we succeeded in pushing back that faculty committee that was attempting to harass Dr. Mack, I became general counsel to his Project for Extraordinary Experience research there in Cambridge. And in that context, I got to meet dozens of so-called experiencers, people who had very credible reports about encountering the actual occupants of these UFO craft, on the ground. And so I continued to do this research. And because of that, I was later asked to become general counsel to Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project. And in 2001, we actually gathered some two dozen officials and employees and stuff, head investigator for the Federal Aviation Agency, other military officials. And we presented sworn testimony at the Washington, D.C. National Press Club, to the staff members of the House and Senate. so that they would know that this has been going. So we've been doing, been engaged in this process for decades now. And finally, with Lou Elizondo and Chris Mellon coming forward in December of 2017 and actually bringing forth videotapes from the F-18 Super Hornets, from the USS Roosevelt, and from the USS
The ones that have been widely circulated.
Gun camera footage, and the New York Times, importantly, chose to publish it. And so that began this entire most recent era of an upsurge in public attention about the UFO issue and bringing forward people from Congress to become engaged in this process. And now exercising the authority of Congress to bring witnesses before the Congress with immunity so that they could not be retaliated against by their superiors inside the government. And that process is going on right now. And as most of your viewers know, that one of the most recent examples of the testimony was Colonel David Grush, who on July 26th of 2023 appeared before the House Oversight Committee, their subcommittee on national security, and under oath testified that as the liaison from the National Reconnaissance Office to the UFO task force, it was hidden inside the Pentagon. He became privy to information that convinced him that we were in possession of a non-human extraterrestrial spacecraft and that we were in possession of biological proof from the occupants of the craft that they were non-human. And he testified. I was there sitting right behind him when he testified to that. And then I went up and talked with people from the House Oversight Committee and said, look, you can get a lot more information from Colonel Grush. Just, you know, contact him and he'll talk to you about this because you have the proper security clearances. He can tell you a lot more information about this. And that process is going on now. And now some 40 additional people have come forward now that the Congress is extending its protection over them to come and testify to the Congress so that they cannot be retaliated against. And now, very importantly, the day following Colonel Grush's testimony, which would be July 27th now of 2023, the United States Senate passed, I mentioned, by 17-0, the Senate Intelligence Committee put forward this 64-page bill that actually proposed setting up an entire process by means of which all of the information that had been obtained by any one of the six military services of our country, any of the 18 intelligence agencies, any of the 32 Defense Department agencies, or any of the aerospace companies that had been put into possession of any of this technology for the purposes of back engineering it, or even understanding it, had to gather all of this information together and put it, give copies of it to the National Archives so that it could be reviewed by the members of Congress who had the proper clearances. That's an extraordinarily important step that has been taken now. That portion of the bill has been passed so that order is presently outstanding. And as of October 18th of this year, approximately 2 weeks or so before the national election that everybody's talking about now, that information has to be turned over to the National Archives. And the provision there says that every piece of that information that is more than 25 years old, that is basically anything earlier than 2000, all the way back to 1945,
has to become public.
So, you know, we're right on the brink of an extraordinary download.
Oh boy, of information. The shit's going to hit the fan when that goes public.
But what's happening is the same elements that have been lying and keeping it secret for all these decades is highly mobilized to try to cut back on this. And they're going to try to assert exceptions and say, oh, well, you know, the national security of the United States is going to be irreparably damaged if you make this available, and they're going to besiege the president. It will still be Joe Biden as of then to assert the authority that he has under the statute that's been passed to keep it secret. So that's going to be one of the major campaign issues that we're engaged in through the New Paradigm Institute that we have set up in Washington, D.C. We have offices right there on Capitol Hill. We are one of the only civilian groups inside the federal conclave. You know, we're right next door to the Senate Intelligence Committee and the United States Supreme Court, right across the street from the Capitol building. We're meeting regularly with members of the staff of the Senate Intelligence Committee and the House Oversight Committee to get them to put further legislation forward to limit the restrictions that are going to be placed on this information. Because it's preposterous to think that the reality of the existence of an extraterrestrial civilization is a threat to the national security of the United States. That's like you're declaring that water is a threat to the national security of the United States. Just because it's important for us to have an adequate water supply, they can't classify the entire existence of water. That's what they're trying to do here. So the New Paradigm Institute is engaged in setting up a nationwide program of Citizens for Disclosure. That we're going to be having action centers in every single one of the 435 congressional districts that are going to be able to put wind under the wings of the Congress people who want this to be revealed, which out of the 435 members of Congress, over 420 of them, want this stuff revealed. And of the United States Senate, out of the 100 senators, like 97 of the senators, are in favor of having this revealed. But the aerospace industry has gotten its claws, into this Michael Turner, who is the head of the House Intelligence Committee. He comes from the 10th Congressional District in Ohio, which is the home of the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where they took the first, the craft that was downed, crashed in Roswell. In 1947, that's the main field office of Radiance Technologies, which has got this secret program that's called Prompt Global Strike. They're attempting to back engineer the propulsion systems of the UFOs in order to create a first strike nuclear weapon on the part of the United States that can be launched from the U.S. and strike into the heart of Russia or China within 2 minutes. This is just how they're prisming. That's how they're prisming this information, and we need to step in. The citizens of the country need to step in.
We do
empower Congress, encourage Congress to step in and stop this program and move forward to establish a treaty on our planet that no nation state or no other entity on our planet will be allowed to utilize the technology recovered from an extraterrestrial vehicle or an extraterrestrial civilization for making weapons. We've got to stop this now, right in this earliest stages. Now, people may complain that it may have been going on for some time, but we're still in the cosmic timescale. We're at the very beginning of this encounter, at least most recent encounter with the UFO beings. And we need to take radical steps right now to establish a treaty prohibiting the development of this technology into any kind of a weapon system on the part of any of the nations of the planet. We've got to do this immediately. And that's part of what the New Paradigm Institute is going to be doing, in addition to organizing the Citizens for Disclosure in all 435 congressional districts in all 50 states. We're going to be sending letters to the Congress people, the proposing people. We're going to be protecting whistleblowers. We have over a dozen lawyers at the New Paradigm Institute now to help protect the whistleblowers, to facilitate them coming forward to Congress and presenting the information to them without retaliation. We have an entire set of courses that we're teaching. We're teaching actually college level courses.
I'm going to get a degree.
Exactly.
In extraterrestrial study. I'm going to be one of the first people that signs up. I want to get a degree in extraterrestrial studies.
And so we're doing that
that's awesome.
Paradigm Institute. And any of your listeners, you know, all they have to do is go to newparadigminstitute.org and they can sign up. You know, and now it's a rigorous course. Like, and you can't just be given a master's degree without doing the work. But I've already done the first of the lectures in the extraterrestrial studies course. I've got another one tomorrow that I'm going to be doing. Tomorrow we're going to be reviewing, for example, all of the different theories as to what the origin and nature of the UFO phenomenon is. Is it extraterrestrial? Awesome. Is it extra-dimensional? Might it conceivably be extratemporal? Is it conceivable that our human family sometime in the future has been able to crack the code on time travel and are coming back here now, attempting to warn us away from the nuclear weapons and the massive climate change, the contamination of our planet with fossil fuels, so that we're threatening the life-generating capacity of our planet? We're going to be reviewing all of that tomorrow.
Then
we're going to be covering later in later lectures what the geopolitical ramifications are of the discovery of the existence of this extraterrestrial civilization. What are the legal and constitutional implications of the long time lying that's been going on the part of this deep state to our Congress and to our presidents and to other people? You know, we have to decide whether there's going to be some sort of truth and reconciliation process by means of which the people that have engaged in this kind of lying in the past, in exchange for them coming forward in confessing, basically, acknowledging what's been going on so that we can remedy the problems now in their earlier stages. All of this is being supervised by the New Paradigm Institute, and we've been designated in the Senate statute as one of the entities that are empowered to nominate people to this special board that is the subject matter of the 64-page Senate bill, that they're proposing setting up a board of review, basically a UFO records review board, to determine what of this information needs to be made available to the public right away. How much of it needs to be given some further analysis to understand the repercussions of it. But they are authorized under, in fact, empowered under the statute to actually establish a UFO controlled disclosure campaign to roll this information out to the people of the world. This is an absolutely extraordinary piece of legislation recognizing the reality of the UFO phenomenon. Demanding that it be all the records be gathered together and put forward to this board so they can review it all and determine what information is going to be released immediately to the people. That would be October 18th, basically, of this year. And then how much is going to be revealed over what type of a period. I mean, the fact that this is going on right now is unknown to 99% of all of the people in the country. That's why it's so important to have programs like this where you're sharing the information with people.
Yeah.
So people can go, holy shit, are you telling me that the Congress of the United States is putting forth a statute to set up a process of revealing all this information and we don't even know about it?
That's right.
That's part of the job of the New Paradigm Institute, is to get this information out and to participate in nominating who the people are that are going to be on this board that the president is going to appoint once we get that provision passed, and that all of the information that is in the hands of any of these agencies or military services or intelligence agencies or aerospace industry has to be turned over to Congress so we can do that. So that's what we're engaged in at the New Paradigm Institute. So people should just contact us at newparadigminstitute.org. It's right there at the bottom of the screen. And not only get all of the information that we have now, but join this course, become students to really get made familiar with all the details of things that you've heard about. Oh, I've heard about Roswell. I've heard that there are a couple of books around about it. I've heard about, some of these nuclear missiles being shut off. But, but the people, in order to sustain as you pointed out, a line of argument with people that are just total skeptics, you have to have the information. And I'll have a, I'm putting together a syllabus right now that has active links in the syllabus.
Nice.
So that every place where we make an assertion about a particular fact, you can just link right onto it. And there you've got it right there. Inside government documents, you know, classified documents that now we've gotten our hands on. Richard Dolan, who is the kind of leading historian in this field, is going to be having additional lectures following mine, where he goes into great depth and detail about each of these major historical events, like Roswell and like the thing at the Maelstrom, and et cetera. So everybody will become familiar in detail and be provided all of the documentation that they need to just put it right on the table when they're having one of these discussions.
That's incredible. I just had Michael Schratt on my show, and him and I had a 3-hour tutorial on crash retrievals. And, you know, he's also a historian. I'm sure you know Michael. I'm sure you've met Michael.
Sure, I know him.
Michael Schratt. Well. Yes. Yeah. you know, I believe.
Interesting. I happen to know almost everybody now over all these 40 to 47 years that I've been involved this. I'm surprising myself. I'm one of the senior citizens in the whole area now, and that I've met and know virtually everybody that's in the field. And we're all friends, you know, that everybody's trying to support each other moving forward, start sharing this information. And what the New Paradigm Institute is doing is trying to gather together all of the major players in this, including experiencers and researchers and writers and historians and scientists, to be able to focus them, to be able to present the information not only to the citizens of the country, but very importantly to the Congress, so they can know the right questions to ask and the right documents to demand. Well, that's what we're engaged in.
And I think that the, you know, and I talk about this a lot, and I use my platform and the following I have to try to get this across to people. And I believe that, look, it's not by accident that our society is in a state of survival mode continuously for one reason or another, whether it be an economic crisis, you know, a quote health crisis, you know, a conflict. There's always something to keep, you know, there seems to be always something to keep our human family struggling to try to put food on the table and pay their rent, and so that they don't have time for a conversation about UFOs. And I know that is not by accident, you know, that there are systems and philosophies that have been put into place that keep people in that state. But I also know that if people realized the truth of this technology and what it would do, let's say just for their bills, you know, for this ever increasing price just to live, that all nations that are quote civilized seem to be putting on each and every citizen, you know, and how they continue to gain in profit and comfortability while everyone else seems to have to struggle harder and harder. And, you know, one of the things that I believe firmly is that, you know, you will get people to be encouraging Congress to do their responsible duty. You know, the more they understand that this affects them every day of their life, whether they realize it or not. The implications of this technology are profound, and they would change the shape of society in a way that would allow for, you know, people to thrive in a, without having to, you know, borrow a loan debt just to have enough money to pay gas and get to work and all this stuff. But, you know, I do a lot of research into World War II, JFK, you know, and I see the signature of these, of the same people over and over and over again, all the way up until 9/11 to Iraq, to what's going on right now. And I know that you've had a better seat than I have and a much longer time to I didn't mean to come off to say that, you know, you're so much older than I am. But you've been in the thick of it is what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to say you're ancient or anything, Dan. You look great. You're not that old. But I want to ask you about, you know, how do we get around this oligarchical deep state, you know, ties and the fact that, you know, this fascist philosophy, this has direct Nazi ties, and it has a lineage right through the American government, right back into the Third Reich. And I say that, and people are like, yeah, you know, effing Nazis. But I'm like, no, literally, there is a direct literal lineage. I'm not speaking philosophically, although you could talk about that as well. You know, if you look into, you know, Operation Paperclip, which is an obvious one, you know, and what's been going on as far back as, you know, the Harriman brothers and Dulles and these families, the same families, have been orchestrating these things. And I know you've been, you know, you are privy to a lot of information about this. And how do we get around them? Because they're going to be the ones who are, you know, quietly making sure things don't come out. They're the ones who are obsessed with control and power and money. You know, I'm wondering how we're going to get around them after everything they've done.
Well, one of the very first things that we need to do, Faust, is we need to inform the American people to start with. This American national security state that was set up in 1947 through the passage by Congress of the National Security Act of 1947 is a fundamentally serious problem that we're facing here. That the national security state people believe that that particular statute by Congress has empowered them to do these kind of things that they're doing. They've garnered unto themselves this kind of a power and authority to lie and cheat and steal and kill and smuggle drugs and weapons around the world, you know, all purportedly in the name of fostering and promoting the national security of the United States, whatever that means, you know. And so that we have to notify people about this. And given the fact that we now have a coalition of people that want to have this UFO information exposed, and the realization of the existence of this extraterrestrial civilization made public to everybody. We have all Republicans and Democrats all across the spectrum are supporting this, with the exception of those people that are basically in pocket of the private aerospace industry that wants to capitalize and make money on this and to commercialize all of this technology, that we need to get this made public. We have just entered into an agreement with this group, a major production group in Hollywood, to be engaged in making documentary films. The New Paradigm Institute has got the capacity now to make documentary films about this.
Nice.
And that what we're doing is, while we're educating people in the master's degree program to which you referred earlier, this master's degree program in extraterrestrial studies, we're going to be generating thousands of people across the country who become expert at this information. And they're going to be setting up these action teams, these Citizens for Disclosure, in all 435 congressional districts and in all 50 states. These people are going to be all participating and sharing information. And one of the jobs that we have at the New Paradigm Institute is to get all of this information organized and make it available, but also, very importantly, to put it into a narrative that people are able to understand, not in books that people don't read, but in motion pictures and in documentary films. That we're in the process of getting ready to make a major documentary film about Dr. John Mack. And what it is that happened to him and what the particular information is that he had. And in that context of basically infotainment, you know, it's very, very important, just like the Karen Silkwood movie that you referred to earlier, you know, that we had Mike Nichols do that motion picture along with Cher and Meryl Streep and the others. that thousands and thousands of people went to see the movie. And they went, oh, you know, this private nuclear power plant or this nuclear reprocessing plant is terribly dangerous, you know, and they shut it down. We actually shut down the major processing plant where they were trying to take the spent nuclear fuel from all 103 of the nuclear power plants around the United States and bring it all to this facility and grind it up and renew it so they could use more fuel. So we stopped that whole process in the Karen Silkwood case. You know, we did the same thing in Iran-Contra when the Congress passed the law prohibiting the executive branch and the intelligence agencies from giving any support, direct or indirect, to this criminal operation of the Contras down in Nicaragua, who had been declared international outlaws by the International Court of Justice for mining the international harbors down in Nicaragua. You know, we were able to reveal that and to force congressional hearings about that, that people became familiar with. All of that was done by our institute. So that we're engaged in that process right now, so that we're going to be not only garnering all the information together and training people to understand it all, but we're going to be generating narrative forms of media that we're all a completely public interest operation. There's no profit that is going to be made by any of us on this. This is just, we're making this available so that screenwriters and directors and producers and stuff can have this information. So just the way they did with Iran-Contra, that they ended up making movies, for example, Die Hard 2. Mm-hmm. Die Hard 2 was all about Oliver North and the people that were engaged in criminal support of drug smuggling down in Central America. That if you make this information available to people, they'll write stories about it. One of the things we're going to be striving to do is to make sure that it's accurate, to not support fictionalizing this information, to let people know exactly what's going on. For example, when Mace Neufeld and Bob Ramey, who are the folks who do all the Tom Clancy movies, you know, Hunt for Red October and Patriot Games and all that, when they wanted to do the Iran-Contra story, right? And then we would start explaining to them what was going on in Iran-Contra, and they and that they said, well, you can't suggest that the CIA is smuggling cocaine, you know, from Central America to finance purchasing weapons for the Contras. You can't say that. And we said, well, sure you can, because that's what's true, you know. And in fact, we've shown that to the Senate, to the committee that John Kerry was the head of. You know, we've got all the documents that can prove that. No, you can't do that, you know. And so that we refused to do the movie with them.
Good for right? you.
And the same thing is true with this. We're not going to support any fictionalizing of this information. Now, you know, the bad guys on the other side are going to say, oh, it's fictionalizing to suggest that the CIA was smuggling cocaine or heroin. That's not fictionalizing at all. You know, we've got Sully Castillo, who was the head of the DEA down in Ilopango at the base where they were moving the weapons through, who has photographs of them loading the cocaine on the airplanes that they were smuggling the weapons into the Contras with. So we've got absolute rock-hard evidence of the things that we're asserting, and it'll support a narrative forms that can be shared with the people. And once the people start finding out about all this stuff, and they know the details of it, and it's in the context of an issue that has the most widespread, totally bipartisan support for getting this information made public, that is going to be the carrier wave by means of which this narrative can be set forth in an understandable way about, look at the lengths to which this has now gone. That they're actually lying to presidents and lying to the people, lying to Congress about the existence of an extraterrestrial civilization. And they're punishing people, average citizens, who are attempting to just tell the truth about this. They're ruining their lives, even to the point of killing some people, according to David Grush.
And they're destroying the planet. And you know, David Grush is not the first.
By the
person.
Way,
and
the, destroying our planet.
And and by the way, you know, the problems that we're facing right now with the catastrophic situation and the bio, you know, the health of our biosphere and the planet. These people have made enough money keeping this technology from us they should not be allowed to now profit, you know, and be rewarded for because the damage is done. I mean, the plastics and the oil and the fossil fuels, this damage alone is going to take us decades to recover from. And so, you know, I try to tell people what the truth about the legacy of the Bush family. You know, people don't want to believe it. People have a hard time imagining that. And I try to inform them about MENA, Arkansas, and about George Bush's direct relationship with the Clintons, and how this legacy goes way back to, you know, to not just to George Bush's, you know, father, not just Prescott, but Prescott's father-in-law. And I try to paint a picture of this legacy that has gone on, because these interests, they've been about the same thing for as long as they've been around. And that is, you know, a fascist control of everybody. That's what they want. They, you know, they made that clear when they tried to play their hand with when they tried to get Butler. Was he Lieutenant Corporal?
Smedley Butler. He was the commander of the United States Marine Corps. He was the commander. Yeah.
Right. When they tipped her.
1934.
That's right.
Yeah.
And lead a foot army of veterans to physically, you know, have an actual insurrection, take over the White House. They were going to prop him up as president. You know, I'm just like, you know who backed that, right? The Colgates.
It was the people,
you know,
it was the people from Brown Brothers Harriman. They were the collective right. investors in Brown Brothers Harriman. The CEO of which was George Herbert Walker, the maternal grandfather of George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, and the legal counsel for the organization of Brown Brothers Harriman was Alan Dulles, you know, who was made the first civilian head of the CIA. You know, I mean, and the people don't believe it because it's so contrary to everything that they've been told. But what's happened now, I've been involved over the past 50 years, you know, since graduating from Harvard Law School, in a kind of a peculiar practice where I've ended up in positions where I'm able to publicly reveal to people some of the secrets.
Yes.
And what's happened is I think it has contributed to, in not the controlling element in it, but has contributed to the lack of confidence in the government. And that's what you see happening now. We see manifesting this complete lack of respect for the government, lack of trust for the government, because they have abused the trust that the people have put into the hands of the government. And because of that now, the people are withdrawing their loyalty and support to the government itself. Same thing is happening to both political parties. People are withdrawing their kind of loyalty to either of the two political parties because both of them have abused the trust that's been put in them. And so what we have to do now is we have to take full advantage of the existence of this huge constituency of people that want to have this information revealed to help restore confidence in legitimacy in the functioning of our government institutions. The Congress has to respond effectively. The people in both political parties have to respond responsibly. And we have to have them come to the aid of the people. And the fact that they aren't coming to the aid of the people means that we, the people ourselves, have to rise up and demand that this information be made available. And if Congress doesn't make it available in an official form, we will make it available through the New Paradigm Institute and others. We're going to be choreographing the information, putting it together in a narrative form to share with people, going, wow, look at this. Now I understand. You know, I've seen, I saw the documentary film series on Netflix, or I saw, you know, on Amazon Prime. I saw the multi-season series that is actually being done. We're starting with the Silkwood case. We've got a major documentary film that's being prepared now of the truth behind the Karen Silkwood case. The movie that we got made, you know, ended, as people may remember, with Karen Silkwood, played by Meryl Streep, staring into the rearview mirror of a car, headlights descending upon her, and you just heard this grinding crash at the end of the movie. But the reality is, we know what happened from that point forward. We know what happened, of who killed her. We've got Bill Vedder and the other guys that were in the car that killed her. You know, we know exactly who they are. I mean, we won a $10.5 million judgment against the Kerr-McGee Nuclear Corporation in that case. What people don't know, for example, is that the law firm that we beat, the law firm that was representing the Kerr-McGee Nuclear Corporation that lost the $10.5 million, Crowe Dunleavy, the senior partner of Crowe Dunleavy, was Lawrence Walsh, who was handpicked by the right-wing court in Washington to be the head special prosecutor in Iran-Contra, because they thought that he hated us because we had embarrassed his major law firm. So they selected him to be the head of the special prosecutor's office that Ed Meese asked to get put into place to try to shut off the investigation. And it totally backfired because Lawrence Walsh, among all people in the country, knew that we were right. He's the one that paid the price for it, you know? And so he came to us, the first people they came to say, what's going on here? And so we met with Ross Perot and others, who briefed them all and gave them the information, and ended up getting six of the major players in that indicted right from the special prosecutor. And it was George H.W. Bush who pardoned all of them. You know,
go figure.
At the direct behest of Barr, you know, who was his attorney general, you know, and now here's Barr coming up again. It now working with the Trump administration. These people have been around and they keep recycling. And so what we need to do is get people informed in the context of this extraordinarily popular movement that we have to see the operations of the national security state that have come to this point where they are destroying our planet and lying to us all, and lying to presidents, lying to our Congress. We've got to do away with them. We've got to disassemble this extraordinarily sinful structure of the Central Intelligence Agency. It is the creature of the national security state, in that they've garnered unto themselves the authority to murder, to lie, to smuggle heroin and cocaine around the world, to be selling weapons and explosives to right-wing crazy people all around the world. You know, that's what I'm saying. We've got to utilize the popular knowledge about all of this to cure this problem that is undermining the confidence of people in our government and the legitimacy of our government. This is one of the most extraordinary experiments of the human family in history of trying to have democracy really work. And that this is a major threat to the whole democratic experiment that we're engaged in now. And so that all of us have to rally together to contact the New Paradigm Institute.org and become students in the course to get to know about this stuff, because we will talk about this deeper question even in the courses that we're going to be teaching.
And you teach a class too, it sounds like a class that I want to teach one day. I think it's called the 1%. I'm trying to find the title of it. A History of the 1% and Their Influence on American Policy. And I mean, incredibly and ironically, you studied foreign policy at Harvard under Henry Kissinger, who doesn't have the best reputation for his foreign policy, but to say the least.
But he did know he did know what the reality was. And as I've mentioned before,
yes,
you know, I sat there in Gov 182 with Kissinger right in the very first lecture saying, gentlemen, he says, if there is any man in this class, I was in the last all male class at Harvard College out of the 350 years. We were in the last male class. And he says, gentlemen, if there's any man here who doesn't believe that our government has the right to lie, cheat, steal, and even kill to promote the interests of our own country, you should not remain in this class. You know, and so I said, wow. I'm staying in the class. I'm going to find out what it is they're talking about, what it is that they're doing. And so I have been sharing that since I graduated from the college and the law school and founded the Harvard Civil Rights Law Review with Mark Green out of New York. We set that up, and we've been working at this now for 50 years. to try to get people to understand during our watch as the baby boomer generation, on our watch, we have undermined the confidence of people in the American government by revealing all of these secrets. But it's not our doing. It's the people who've been lying and cheating and stealing and killing.
That's right.
You know, in our name, under the guise of national security. And what we're doing now is we have to continue exposing this, but at the same time, rebuild the confidence of our people in the legitimacy of our government institutions, in our Congress, in our Supreme Court, in our political parties, you know, that we have to reestablish credibility that they can merit the respect of the people. That's what we're doing through the New Paradigm Institute.
What is really mind-blowing to me is we know more about the truth of what has gone on, thanks largely in part due to what's come out and been recorded in court, right? Because, you know, you can't leave it to the media to report anything that's going to get them in trouble, you know, and we know they have agents set up in every major legacy media, and they've had for decades. But, you know, it was through lawyers and through, you know, discovery in court where we learned about, you know, the 911 hijackers' connection to CIA, the U.S. testing, the Army testing chemical and biological weapons on American citizens, you know, MK Ultra, the truth about the Russiagate steel dossier. So much has come out in court. And so I think lawyers in general are uniquely equipped to deal with the kind of mess that we're in, because the power of the United States government lies in the law and in its, you know, in the way it is written and the Constitution as an entity, right? And that's the thing that they fear, Daniel. You know that the reason why they bet on every horse they can and they're constantly playing sugar daddy to every single person they can buy off and compromise is because they know that the only thing that could work against them is a country's, you know, that the eminent domain of a country and the power that they have as a nation to then say, you know what, this is ours now. And we have the right to take it from you because you stole it, you know, along those lines. That is why I think they're so heavily infiltrated into, especially a constitution and an entity like the United States government presents a very specific and grave threat to them, which is why they have a revolving door with every agency and government position. But I just, it's incredible to me, and I'm constantly marveling at how much destruction has gone on because of that infiltration. And I think that, you know, as these things are exposed and we get a little bit of transparency, actual transparency, as horrific as it's going to be and as shocking as it's going to be for people to learn the truth about what, you know, what has gone on behind the scenes to orchestrate some of the greatest tragedies, catastrophes, you know, and conflicts of our time, then people are going to demand, you know, that we do enter this age of transparency, that there can no longer be a one-sided surveillance of people and government has unchecked, you know, allowance to take our money and do whatever it is that they do, which is never good for us, you know, and this issue is a huge part of it. So I'm, you know, who do you see as having benefited the most from the public's ignorance, not only to these orchestrated false flags that we've seen over the last 80 years, but also the incredible cover up and then conditioning of society to view anyone who wants to talk about our, you know, extraterrestrial family as a kook or a nut, you know, who benefits the most from this?
Well, I think that if you track it back to the actual creation in 1872, immediately following the American Civil War, to the creation of this private shareholder-owned corporation as a business entity, pursuant to which the people who effectively own all of the resources of a particular corporation and a company are completely immunized. The shareholders are all completely immunized against any personal legal responsibility for the conduct of the corporation. And the corporation is driven by the sole motive of maximizing the income for the corporation so that they can divide it up into royalties to the shareholders. And yet the shareholders are completely immunized. Their board of directors are insured and immunized. And the corporation itself, they set up shell corporations to conceal the activities they're engaged in. That particular structure, the structure of the private shareholder-owned corporation in the immunization of the shareholders from liability for the conduct of that corporation that is generating the income to those shareholder owners is a profoundly sinful structure. That's how we referred to that at the Jesuit headquarters. That's a profoundly sinful structure. Just as on the other side, with the communists the Stalinists and stuff that ascended to power in Russia, completely perverted the original revolutionary aspirations of the people that rose up in October of 1917 to overthrow Tsar Nicholas II. You know, a horrible tyrant and a royalist, one of the last remaining royalists functioning in the world. You know, that these distortions of the ideals of both our country, the Soviet Union, and other nations, we the people have to recover the bona fides of our legitimate governments, because the people that own the shares, they created this mechanism, this vehicle, by means of which they could then take over and monopolize all of the major economic sectors of our country. That they took over the rail lines and the shipping lines, the agricultural corporations, the meat packing companies, iron and steel people, the railroads, you know, a group of robber barons, which is actually even taught in American civics, you know, that there was a whole group of these like 30 families or so that became the robber barons. And these people used to meet and gather at Brown Brothers Harriman. A private investment firm where all of these people, the Rockefellers and the DuPonts and the Harrimans and the others, the Carnegies, they all gathered together and they sat and planned how they were going to take over the government and how they were going to run the government and use the instrumentalities of the government to foster and promulgate the interests of their private corporations. And those corporations ended up actually achieving the ability to assert that they were people, that the corporation was a person, and completely alienating any responsibility from the shareholders into some completely fictional person. And so the bottom line is that I believe that if you track it back to Brown Brothers Harriman, there's a book that exists. Actually, I don't know if I've got it here somewhere. There's a book. It is called the Nazi Hydra, HYDRA. The Nazi Hydra is a book that tracks some of this history, so that you can actually understand the origins of these robber barons and how those families came together at Brown Brothers Harriman, and they established this cabal along with their law firm of Sullivan and Cromwell. These two entities, Brown Brothers Harriman and Sullivan and Cromwell, joined together to basically take over control of the entire United States government. These are the people that tried to mobilize the military coup against Roosevelt in 1934 when he tried to move in after the Great Depression and rein in these robber barons, these 30 families or so, and that these guys mutated. And that they've maintained their control through the Central Intelligence Agency. They actually, the man who wrote the memo to Truman to set up the CIA, Robert Lovett, was a senior partner of Brown Brothers Harriman. And that the operations directorate of the Central Intelligence Agency that runs their covert operations are driven by maintaining continued privileged access to the strategic raw materials needed by our American corporations. That's what they do, you know, and that is a sinful structure. So you not only have the private shareholder-owned corporation as a central structure, you have the creation of the Central Intelligence Agency in the national security state of the United States government as a central structure. These have to be disassembled. Okay.
Yes.
And there, it's not that there are not legitimate interests that people have in maintaining security over not being invaded by other people or taken over by other people. But the people have to come to realize that the United States government has functioned as the main bad guy.
That's right.
You know, for decades.
Period.
Invading the Middle Eastern oil fields, you know, under the pretense that somehow Saddam Hussein had nuclear weapons. And after everybody finds out that it was a complete, absolute, unabrogated lie, they say, what can we do? It was a lie, but we've got to leave our troops there because, you know, we now are responsible. We've destroyed the entire infrastructure of a country, so we have to rebuild it.
Meanwhile, it was these people who got together in 2000, Project for a New American Century, and said we needed a new Pearl Harbor. In order to assert American dominance, continue their full spectrum dominance, you know, it's going to be slow going unless we have, you know, a new Pearl Harbor. FYI, what happened a year later? 9/11, you know, and perfect.
We have to be careful to not let people characterize the movement that we have here to reveal the information about the UFOs to be nothing more than just a stalking horse for those of us who are opposed to the criminal excesses of the capitalist system. You know, but the bottom line is that when you ask the specific question of who it is that is profiting by this, in this particular instance, that these are the capitalist people who own the shares in the major aerospace industries.
Yeah.
And the major aerospace industries are reaching in and hiring people out of the government, out of this deep state secret group that are knowledgeable about the UFO phenomenon and the back engineering efforts that are being made and the crash recovery efforts that are being made. And they're recruiting them to find out all the national security state secrets and then capitalizing on them and getting access to the technology and attempting to violate all of the antitrust laws to establish, you know, unfair competitive advantage over all of their competitors. You know, this is what's going on. And so that is the answer to the question. We just need to be careful to be responsible about sharing with people how it is that we can solve these problems. You know, that we can go. I mean, I'm completely supportive of private entrepreneurial spirit. If a group of people come together and want to engage in the business and can share their resources and produce a particular product, as long as they're responsible legally for whatever the damages are that are inflicted by their product, that's fine. You know, that's what the whole common law system of tort responsibility is, you know, but not to set themselves up behind some complete shield of a corporation and then have their lawyers come in and try to figure out how many fake corporations they can set up so that if they ever get sued, you know, they don't have any money in the hopper for the group that is charged with responsibility for violating the law. You know, that we've got to solve this. That's what the New Paradigm Institute is about, trying to figure out what the new paradigm is going to be.
Yeah.
That once we reveal the secrets of what's been going on and take responsibility to reestablish confidence in the fundamental constitutional principles that are the basis of our country, the freedom of speech, the freedom of travel, all of the things that are set forth in the Bill of Rights, the separation of powers, a legitimate judiciary that will review the constitutional conduct of the other branches of government. These are extraordinarily wise institutions. And the fact that the national security state has been created in 1947 to try to go around all of those restrictions, to go around all of the kind of the separation of powers to the point where they're actually willing to say that the president of the United States has no need to know the information and that the Congress of the United States can be lied to about the existence of the programs. This has gone too far. Okay. So what we're saying is that we are here to try to remedy these problems. We are here to try to sustain the principles of our Constitution. We're here to try to sustain the fundamental values of individual liberty in the right to vote for our representatives and have them exercise constitutional power, not to have some deep, dark, deep state, national security state functioning under the cover of darkness and having a black budget that is basically pilfering billions of dollars from other appropriated monies and secretly financing some covert operation, all under the purported guise of national security. It's a fascist operation and has to be dug out and unseated, and our government has to be restored to its legitimate constitutional authority. Congress has the ability to do that. And the representatives that are in there now that support doing this need to be given support. That's what the Citizens for Disclosure is all about. That's what the New Paradigm Institute is all about. And if, in fact, they don't do their job, we are going to raise up other people among our citizens who will fulfill the constitutional duties and take those offices and establish a new paradigm, a new post-national security state paradigm, a post-disclosure.
Yeah.
Because the disclosure is going to entail a lot more than disclosing just the secrets about UFOs.
Yeah.
The disclosure movement is to expose the sins of the national security state and try to establish a new regime, a new geopolitical regime on our planet in which we're not going to be warring with each other. We're not going to be, you know, threatening nuclear war every generation. We have to do this together. We have to do this, as citizens of the world. We have to do this as members of our human species if we're going to merit participation, you know, in whatever the galactic federation is. What if there is one, you know, we have to find out about all that. We can't be kept in the dark about this. Our American citizens have to know what's going on so that we can share our views. We can elect people that are going to implement what we want done. And we want to live peacefully and prosperously with this extraterrestrial civilization. That's what the Disclosure Project is all about, and that's what the New Paradigm Institute is designed to help bring about.
I believe there's a lot of our extraterrestrial family that has been waiting, you know, patiently for us to realize that this is the next step in human evolution. God, you know, it warms my heart to hear that you guys are so focused on all these things, because this is it. This is a vital, vital moment in our human history right now. And so I'm volunteering, and if I can help in any way, I would love to be a mouthpiece for the New Paradigm Institute and help you guys out, because I believe in this and I know that it's the key to any future we have that is not apocalyptic, you know, where, you know, most of us are not here and the rest of them are in their bunkers. I don't want to live in that future. And I don't want my kids to either, but I have to ask you, Danny, a few questions for my resident skeptic. You know, he has a few for you, but I'm going to condense them. So he wants to know, he said, given that most UFO incidents come from witness testimony, whether high level or not, have you actually personally seen concrete evidence of non-terrestrial UFOs? And if not, I think you already answered this a little bit. You did see a video. Given the nature of your work and the fact that you don't like to speculate, how can you be sure the U.S. has any actual non-terrestrial crafts or weapons or bodies? And additionally, if you do believe, how can you, as a lawyer, have faith in something that is not backed by any physical evidence? That was his first question.
That's an easy one. You know, that, as I say, that not only have I seen the photographs of crash retrievals that were in the files of the Project Blue Book, you know, that were officially delivered to the Library of Congress into the Madison Building in the basement, brought in there, guarded by U.S. military and intelligence guys, whom I had to show the identification to get in, that not only have I seen them, but in fact, I was personally involved in the deciphering of the telegram that was in the hands of General Ramey at Roswell. The infamous picture of General Ramey kneeling by the debris of a weather balloon.
The quote weather balloon, yeah.
Pawn off as the UFO that the trained experts had recognized as some intergalactic space vehicle. You know, oh no, it was just a weather balloon. He was kneeling next to the weather balloon debris, and he had a telegram in his hand. You could see it, but you couldn't read it at that time. But actually, I was approached by a young man who thought that he had figured out who the photographer was who took that photograph for the Roswell newspaper, and he did find him. We found out that the negatives still existed. We recovered the negatives, had them digitized, had them blown up, and subjected to an analysis so that you could read substantial portions of the telegram. And then they, through computers, they could say, okay, here there's so many vowels and consonants, and in order you can help fill in some of the little blanks that just pursuant to rules of sentence structure would have to have the letters in there. And it talked specifically about taking the disc to Wright Patterson, to Wright Field at that time, and to bring the victims of the crash, bring the victims. You know, I mean, that, and then for them to try to insist that it was a weather balloon, you know, is just a complete lie. Okay, so I was personally involved in both of those things, and I have interviewed direct. As I said, I've interviewed Robert Salas, Captain Salas. You know, at the Maelstrom event of 1967, I've interviewed Colonel Arnoldson that was there. He's the guy that notified NORAD about the fact that all the missiles had been shot off. You know, I'm the one that brought him to testify to his own congressperson. You know, I'm the one who was general counsel to the two dozen witnesses that we brought who testified under oath back in May of 2001. You know, the fact of the matter is, you know, I've taken depositions of numerous people and have developed over the years an ability to try to get at the truth through investigations. You know, it's not that it's impossible for anybody to deceive me, you know, that I'm not perfect. But the fact of the matter is, I have a high level of confidence in this information. And now we have some 40 people that are coming to Congress and testifying under oath and providing corroborating documented evidence of what it is that they're asserting. There are people who have laid their hand directly on one of these craft, you know, that are providing this information to Congress. You know, that it's fine for people to be skeptics. It's fine for people to challenge this information, which enables everybody to hone the information in a much more sound and responsible way to show the kind of corroboration. All of that's a perfectly appropriate thing. But, you know, but you don't just hang out to be a skeptic just because you want to be a skeptic, you know, or you want to, you know, do some kind of idiocy like a table's not a table, you know, that this is just a bunch of atoms spinning around and it's not really a table. And that those of us who believe it's a table are somehow just, you know, delusional. You know, the reality is that they've been lying about this issue for decades. And, you know, the skeptics can hold out as long as they want. And we're not going to hold it against them. You know, I mean, if a person, you know, wants to hold out down to the very end, you know, they can pretend that the earth is flat.
they still do. You know, the moon, I'm sure there will be. There'll be a lot of holdouts.
So what's his second question?
His second question is, what is the best physical evidence we have for the existence of non-terrestrial UFOs or, but I hate this term, biological specimens, you know, in the world right now? And in your decades of experience with disclosure, have you, he already asked that on the what, have you seen physical proof or heard of the existence that goes beyond whistleblower testimony? Well, you just kind of answered that, but the first part.
Well, it goes beyond whistleblower testimony. I mean, when you use that term of art, when you have people that are officially involved in the actual back engineering of these craft and they're professionally involved in it, and they bring the information to Congress and show them their credentials and present direct documented proof that this is going on, you can say, well, other than that, what do you have? The fact of the matter is that's what we have. And that's what supports the, I mean, the United States Senate does not come forward and pass a law on the face of which says that they're convinced that there is UFO information that is being concealed from our United States government. They don't do that, without adequate evidence. That's the answer to that.
I like that answer. I also heard you mention on a previous podcast that there was a video that you had learned about that I think you said would hopefully be shown or was going to be shown to Congress.
I know what that's about. What it is a man who was part of Project Blue Book was an actual U.S. military man who was part of Project Blue Book for the United States Air Force. On his deathbed, confided to me that he had been taken with his commanding officer to S-4 near 11 miles away from Area 51. And had gone down and had seen the craft there hovering, and that he had actually been physically present in the presence of an extraterrestrial being, an extraterrestrial biological entity, Ebi, they call him. And he was being interviewed by his commanding officer. He was personally frightened by this being, thought that he was demonic, and didn't want to go near him. But he was reading cards from telepathic interviews that had been conducted by the military personnel there. I'm convinced that he didn't say it, but I'm convinced that they aren't going to be conducting interviews with an extraterrestrial being and not videotape them, or do a movie picture of them. I mean, because all you have to do is put a camera on them to maintain that information. So that, as I say, I haven't seen the video, but I'm convinced that it must exist. And therefore, when the entities, including all the people at S4, are commanded by Congress to turn over all of the information, every single piece of information they have pertaining to this, that piece of information is going to be included. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to scramble to try to keep that to be an exception. They're going to say, "Whoa, wait a second here. You can't let them see the video because then everybody's going, even the skeptics are going to be convinced that it's true. So we can't let them see that." Now, that's not an argument on behalf of national security. We can't let them see it because they're going to be then convinced that it's true. So we can't let them know it. That's just circular reasoning. That's the incident that I'm talking about.
And the Senate Intelligence Committee has received or been shown the DNA results that came from a recovered non-terrestrial biological entity from a crash site, which is evidence, at least for them at this juncture, that there was someone on or a being on this craft that was not from Earth. Am I correct in saying that?
That's right. That is right.
They have
a number of bodies of extraterrestrial beings in that they've conducted the DNA tests on them and they know that they're not human.
And now the Senate Intelligence Committee also knows, having seen those test results.
I'm sure they
awesome.
Have.
Awesome. This is incredible. The what do we do to get the teeth and claws of this bill because I know about the bill, Danny, and I know about the incredible 64 page version of it. And I know about the smaller version that ended up passing. And I know the way that took the wind out of the sails and the community when we heard about how it had been declawed and there was a big, a lot of disappointment and the sentiment in the community was very low for a while. And this as well as anyone. What can we do to get the teeth and the clause put back in this bill. Is it possible, you know, to resurrect this bill in that kind of powerful form that it was in 64, when it had 64 pages? And who are the, you know, because I know it was, we seemed to be so close. And then it was just like, it was like two people, right? It was like Mitch McConnell and that, excuse my French, dickhead Ohio.
There's Michael Turner, who is the head of the House Intelligence Committee. And then there's Michael Rogers, who's the head of the House Armed Services Committee. And then there was Michael Johnson, who's the new Speaker of the House. And then they reached across to the Senate to get Mitch McConnell to agree to oppose the bill. And then there's one other fellow who is one of the two senators from Alabama who opposed it. Okay, so that was enough, right? Because they hold those chairmanships, they have the authority to be able to punish anybody in their committee who defies the decision on the part of the chair as to what's going to be done. And very importantly, Michael Johnson, who's the Speaker of the House, has the authority, which we've seen recently displayed over and over and over and over again, that he's just not going to allow the bill to be brought to the floor, though there's an overwhelming majority of Republicans and Democrats who want to pass a bill. He has the authority, as they've set up the structures right now, to simply refuse to bring the bill to the floor, because under their rules, he's the guy in charge of making that decision. Unless they're going to remove him and replace him with somebody else, which just causes mayhem over in the House. Of representatives, the bottom line is this small number of people are blocking. So what we're doing, we're going to field action teams in the 10th congressional district of Ohio, which is Turner's district, and we're going to put people into the second, not put them in because they're there already, but the people in the second congressional district in Alabama that are going to where the Redstone Rocket Range is. Where they're trying to back engineer the technology to have a propulsion system for these rockets, that we're going to try to educate and mobilize the people in those congressional districts to be able to insist that that they change their position or they're going to be replaced. So they'll have that it's not going to probably be effective by this time because the nominations are closed. They can't really field anybody to oppose them right now. But if they persist in this, we're going to have the period between 2024 and 2026 to basically remove them. Have their home district people remove them if they don't step back off this and allow this bill to pass.
That's music to my ears. I'll be on call for that too. If I can help in any way,
get all your people, talk to them again repeatedly. Go to the newparadigminstitute.org, sign up, get all the information, and participate in setting up one of these action teams, the Citizens for Disclosure, inside your own county. And write letters to your editors of the local newspapers. Go on your local cable television shows that they've got. But learn the information. So if they challenge you, these skeptics call you and challenge you on the air, that you've got the answers. That's what we're. That's the reason we're teaching the course. And as I say, that we're going to have the syllabus for the entire course. Put up on the website. For the course. So, and it's got the links right in it. So you can you can sit at home and go from one link to another and read every one of these pieces of information, the documents, look at the videos where other people have put forth the evidence. You can become an expert, so recruit all your people to become involved in this. That's you've got this megaphone where you can reach out to them to get them to participate in this, that's what we need.
I've talked to Michael Mazzola. He directed Unacknowledged and The Lost Century, and I know Michael as well. Okay. And I had met, we had spoken a little bit about you and Dr. Greer, and you know, and Dr. Greer can sometimes be outspoken about things. You know, he has kind of strong opinions about people, and I know for people who are following him and you, when you decided to represent Lou, you know, people thought, oh God, you know, he's turning his back on Dr. Greer and all this stuff. And I was like, well, wait a minute, you know, if it's disclosure we're going for, let's hold out, you know, before we know the whole story and not, you know, paint this as a soap opera when it may not be. And people are always, you know, a lot of my friends or who, you know, are also followers of Dr. Greer. So ask Danny what happened. I'm like, I can tell you right now that, you know, that nothing really happened. I know that they were at the press conference together. They gave each other a hug and they sat down. You know, they're working towards the same thing. Not people have different ideas about how to move forward with the right way. But I wonder if you could comment on that.
No, I mean, that's just all that trailer park, you know, back and forth, you know, about, you know, somebody's cousin offended them at a wedding or something. You know, the people are all going in the same direction. Everybody's supporting disclosure. All of us are on board going in the same direction. So, you know, in some may be adopting different tactics, you know, yeah, to try to get it done. And people may, particular moments have different tactical approaches to things, but that's no reason to dwell on any of those things.
Absolutely. I've heard you talk about why you decided to represent Lou and Chris and I also know where your heart is, you know, becoming familiar with your career and knowing the integrity that you have as a man. And so, yeah, I never bought into a lot of some of the stuff that was going around, but I promised I would ask. So I guess they didn't believe me.
People spend time horizontally criticizing each other. That's silly. You know, it's what they call the pedagogy of the oppressed, that people keep beating their head against the glass ceiling of some powerful common adversary that they have. When they start getting frustrated about being able to penetrate the ceiling, they turn horizontally and start criticizing. That's silly, you know. We know from COINTELPRO, the FBI, that they intentionally attempted to do that, to stir up trouble with people, you know, who are all working as allies and try to divide them. That's all silly, you know. Stephen and I get along fine. You know, I was at his last press conference. I talked to the lawyers that are working with him. You know, we have a bunch of lawyers that are representing whistleblowers, you know, that we're getting them to share information with Congress. Yeah. You know, and it is true. It is true that some people emphasize what they think are national security implications about this information because they've had a career in the military, for example. And that they believe that any vehicle coming into U.S. airspace that hasn't been authorized to fly in their airspace, you know, is a potential adversary and a potential threat to their national security. It's a particular vision that they have of national security. It's an overstated perspective on national security. And other people disagree with them on that. They think that that's not a proper standard to be using. And that's fine. But we know that that people like Chris Mellon and Lou Elizondo and David Grush and other people that have been deeply involved in the program and have been taking national security oaths not to reveal certain information, people can become frustrated with them and can also become frustrated over the fact that they emphasize that there are national security implications, which is designed to try to get people that are more conservative to come on board as well, to be interested in getting this information exposed for different reasons, can all be part of an alliance that's going to have the collective effect of lifting up the disclosure. And that's what we're all engaged in now, all together.
That's the goal. Absolutely. I think anything that's working towards that goal, and anyone who's willing to work towards that goal, particularly people who have been there, you know, and worked hands-on in that area, are very important.
We had the same concern when we were doing Iran-Contra, you know, for example, you know, we had sources that were deeply involved in the shipping of weapons to the Contras, you know, giving us information, including the tail numbers on the airplanes, the code words that are used to land the aircraft in secret places. And people say, oh, how can you possibly, you know, work with any of the people that are involved in this? I mean, that's where you're going to get the information.
Right, you know? Right.
Anybody who has any kind of real professional experience in doing these things knows that. So the people who come in with a kind of a less professional understanding of how this information is gathered, you know, may have a knee-jerk response of saying, we ran into that challenge during Iran-Contra. You know, we had the former chief of security of the U.S. military mission in Tehran, a fluent Farsi speaker, you know, who was a great source of information and was giving us all kinds of information about what was going on. You know, we had direct access to inside information about what was going on at the Ilopango airfield in El Salvador, where they were shipping the weapons and the drugs, you know, and it gave us access to the head of the DEA. You know, who, as I mentioned earlier, was Celi Castillo, was taking photographs of them loading the cocaine. Because in order to get the most resistant people to really believe that they could be doing this, you have to get down in close to the information and show them. Here are photographs of them loading it in, you know. Then they went, oh, well, okay. And so, how can you be dealing with Ross Perot? You know, Ross Perot is the guy that got brought the wire diagram, which I drafted, and the memo on who the off-the-shelf enterprise was. You know, Ross Perot is the one that brought that directly to Bill Webster, the head of the FBI.
Zapata, right? Ross Perot was under,
you know, so that's how we got the major investigation of the FBI to be undertaken. You know, so I appreciate that people have different views as to how you go about doing this, right. But none of those things arise to any kind of critical issue that deserves much attention.
No, I agree. Yeah, and that was Zapata Oil, right? It was the shell company or the quote oil company, the offshore drilling that George Herbert Walker Bush was running. Right, all kinds of he had a lot of them all over the place, right?
There's a lot of it. I mean, you know, the Jorge Diaz Serrano, who was his business partner in Zapata Oil, was also later the head of Pemex, the national oil company in Mexico, and the assassins for Operation Condor of the CIA were hidden inside the private security department of Pemex under Jorge Diaz Serrano. You know, we know all that stuff. Just relax, everybody. You know, that we're all working towards the same objective here. Everybody's going to be in our friends together, working together on this.
Absolutely. I want to give you a minute, Danny, so we've been talking about the new paradigm. We've been encouraging everyone who's listening, sign up, check it out, you know, get educated in everything we've got and get organized on everything we need to get so that we can continue the momentum we've gathered, you know, with this bill and hopefully, you know, in the next few years, we get the clause put back in this bill. And then there's no stopping disclosure, skeptic or not, you know, and the implications for society as a whole are going to be, I think, wonderfully profound and expansive. But I want to give you a moment to kind of close out the podcast. Well, first of all, thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are. I can hear your phone ringing. You know, we live in a world that is very programmed. You know, the reason why this issue is met with such resistance is partially because, you know, we know that the three-letter agencies have been doing a number on the public for years and making sure that anyone who speaks out is, you know, characterized and slandered and so we got to redo that programming and I think that, you know, the wiser you get, the more refined your programming is. And you're a man who's come into a lot of wisdom. So I was wondering if you could offer something to my listeners, you know, that they could then input into their software, that whether it's about this issue or life in general, it's up to you.
Well, sure. No, I think that this particular issue of securing the maximum possible degree of disclosure about the reality of the UFO phenomenon and the fact that the intelligence behind the UFO phenomenon is non-human and is almost certainly extraterrestrial from another star system. It may manifest in certain ways that is perceived as extra-dimensional as well. But the bottom line is this is one of the most profound sets of pieces of information that could possibly be provided to our human family at this extraordinarily difficult point in time when there are massive wars going on in Eastern Europe. You know, you have this horrible situation going on in Palestine. You know, mm-hmm. you have horrible things going on in the continent of Africa right now, and vicious dictators are rising to power. You know, our human family has to rise up together now to get access to this larger information. And we have to, in this context, start to disassemble the features of the national security state system that exists, not just in the United States, so that's our major focus here, but also in Russia and in other countries around the world. You know, the people of the world are all basically decent people. If we can mobilize us, you know, to set aside the people that are this 1% of the people that are trying to take criminal advantage of everybody and super enrich themselves, you know, through greed and avarice. You know, we have to step up now. And that's what the New Paradigm Institute is designed to organize and facilitate. So just contact the newparadigminstitute.org. Start getting educated about this and participate in becoming a member of the Citizens for Disclosure. Set up one of these action teams in your community and reach out to other people and take responsibility for this. Step out of the shadows as people who are extraordinarily interested in this subject. You know, and write letters to the editor of your local paper. Go on your local cable television shows. You know, but make sure that you're educated about this, so you can respond to the skeptics. You know, and don't attack the skeptics, you know, as you know, being enemies or adversaries. They're just people who haven't quite opened up enough to really understand it. But you can help them do that. You know, be supportive of your brothers and sisters who are just coming to Absolutely. Understand this new issue right now, okay? And let's all work together to bring about a new paradigm across our planet.
Amen to that, Danny. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time, Danny. I appreciate it and your wisdom. And this has been awesome. And thank you to Tyler and everyone else who got this set up. And I appreciate your time, Danny. Thank you so much.
Terrific.
I'll see you take care. Again. Good luck. And yes, absolutely. Sure.